So recent types of attacks, I assume that you have heard of these things already, as I said, so this is just to recapitulate the background. Firstly, we have viruses and worms. So these are computer programs which are transmitted over the internet, for example, as an appendix to emails, which is the newer development. Previously, like 10 years ago or so, where you didn't have so much email, viruses were usually transmitted using pirated software. But today, the main way of transmitting viruses is actually using email, and especially the fact that modern word processing systems like Word, for example, have capabilities, namely macros, which allow viruses to spread over email specifically. Then also something which has received much attention is the hacking of websites and changing the website maybe, or accessing a database which is connecting to the website. Then something which I think the beginning of last year had a lot of attention was the distributed denial of service attacks against websites, also where websites were brought down, but also very famous websites, I think Yahoo was one example, by its distributed attacks. Then I mentioned already sometimes it's possible to access databases illegally over the internet by making use of the web servers. And lastly, you had attacks relating to terroristic intentions and cyber attacks. Although these are at present not so widespread, but there's a potential there. So this is what to keep in mind. So why are they possible? Some general reasons as a background. So firstly, the internet is becoming increasingly complex. So firstly, it's just becoming very big, and a lot of users whom you do not know and who may not be trustworthy. And all of this is connected often with the internet of companies, which means that the internets are also vulnerable via the internet. And the point is also the internet is not just growing, but increasingly people are using the internet and are also setting up servers, for example, who do not have such a sound background in computer science. So 10 years ago, only the experts were using the internet and they knew what they were doing. But today, everyone is using it, and so some people don't use it in a safe way. You also have new methods of access. So, PCs are around for some time, but now, for example, cell phones, and they may have specific vulnerabilities themselves. Cell phones, for example, don't have a lot of computing power, so you may not have very strong security from that point of view with regard to encryption or things like that. Or of course, in the case of cell phones also, the transmission can be attacked even more easily than on the internet, because it's the communication happens wireless, so you can actually receive the signal from wherever you are between the base station or near the base station and near the cell phone. So it's much easier to attack than the internet. And there are other examples of new devices, for example, palm tops, which are also presently rather easy to attack. And another source of possibilities for attack are new ways of working. So for example, teleworking, where you work at home and connect to the company, maybe via the modem. This is also gives new sources for attack, because of course if you do this, then you want to connect to also the sensitive parts of the company, and if someone for example can eavesdrop on your connection, then you can find out the password that you need for the access to the computer, to the company's internet, and not just to your modem access. And yeah, so lastly, I already mentioned this. The problem is that many people are using the internet and are also employed to make this possible in some way, maybe at the internet providers, even in at the technical level, and many of them, or some of them anyway, don't have the adequate background. Because of the current explosive growth in the area, the education didn't really keep track of that. So second kind of reasons are the problem that many companies don't care so much. So they say, oh well, everything is going to be fine and nothing is going to happen. And this has been worked, and this has worked for many companies in the past. Although I mean, from the example that I mentioned earlier, like the Yahoo website, you can see that it's not a very safe strategy. So for a long time you may be safe, but then something happens and you are in really big trouble. And so this is, it's not a good strategy, but unfortunately many companies don't think as far ahead as that. And also the problem is that maybe also because of these global interconnection of the networks, it's not always easy to find hackers, for example, or even if you find them, to bring them to justice, because different laws in different countries may handle the thing in different ways. And yeah, so sometimes people get away with attacks just because you cannot bring them to justice. Another thing, the uniformity of platforms. Actually, well, it says here there's only a few different platforms being used, but in practice, at least at the user side, it's even more drastic than that, because almost everyone is just using Microsoft Windows, at the user side, of course. And so that makes things like these macro-operated viruses transmitted by email so efficient, because everyone is using them and it's very easy to spread the viruses. So this is maybe a phenomenon which you know or may know from different areas where you may have diseases, very different areas like agriculture. If you have a big piece of land which is which only has one kind of plant, then it's very easy for illnesses to spread. And this is the case at the moment. And this is one reason why it's safer at this point to use Linux, for example. Although there may also be security holes there, but the point is simply that most likely very few of your friends will also be using Linux, so they will not send you emails, viruses by email, simply because they use a different operating system. So it's a very simple reason why Linux is more secure at this point. And yeah, also another problem is the view that you simply have to use cryptography in some way and then you will be secure. So for example, if I use SSH, then everything is fine and I don't worry about the fact that people could hack into my database and read the data which is there on my computer and not while it's in transit. So yeah, as I said, security is an all-around thing. It's not enough to concentrate on the communication, for example, but this is, not everyone is aware of this problem. Some more information about the internet. So as I said, it's used almost everywhere. Wherever you go, you're likely to find some kind of internet cafe. It's very big and it really changes the way people lead their lives or people do their work. And even not only the way they do it, but also the kind of things they do at all. So it's a very new thing, very things are being changed, and this means that not everyone is keeping track of this big and fast change. So this, of course, also creates security problems simply because not enough people know what's going on enough. And yeah, again, a bit more detail about these new ways of operating. I mentioned already the teleworking. So we have mobile employees, and yeah, for example, the selling products also works in a different way now. Sometimes you can actually buy something completely electronically by, for example, electronic content, or whatever, music or something over the internet. So it's not just about keeping your email secret, but about the whole process in principle. From if you want to sell something from the very beginning until the very end, everything could be made electronically, at least for some products. And yeah, this raises also specific problems because, I mean, if you compare the fact that you want to sell a book to the fact that you want to sell electronic music, the second thing is more insecure, because if you want to sell a book, then you still have to send the book to some physical address. And if the person does not pay, then in principle you could go to the physical address and tell the person to give you the money. But if you send it to electronically, the music, to somewhere, then you don't know where that is. Could be somewhere around the world, and no chance to get money from that person. So it's inherently more insecure. And yeah, one specific case study here is the case of Metzen. Of course, that is also an important area where it's very important that things are being run smoothly and there are no problems arising. So yeah, one example which is being worked on at the moment is the topic of telemedicine, where you have experts around the world who want to do an operation, for example. So there's maybe some very rare operation you have to perform in some country, and there's no expert available at the location. So you can do it over the internet, that the doctor in some other country performs the operation over the internet using some robot which actually does the operation at the local site. But this is an example where it is very important, of course, that the communication happens securely, because human life depends on it. So it may not be clear why anyone would try to attack this communication, but they want to be sure anyway. So this is something which has to be very secure. Also, other examples given here, increasingly a lot of data is being collected about people, and sometimes you don't want insurance companies to get hold of this data. So for example, also another example is in Iceland, they are currently collecting the complete medical data of the complete population of Iceland, which is not very big. And the reason they do it is for medical research. But the problem is that this one company will have all the medical information of all people in Iceland, and of course they should not just give it away to someone. And also that it must be made secure, that the database storing this information is kept secure, especially if in the future they also add genetic information to the database, which is not the case at the moment, but there are plans to do that. And because if insurance companies get hold of this information, then it may be very interesting to them, because they can raise you and make you pay more fees if you have some genetic problem, for example. And of course you don't want that. So also this is a specific area where there are many problems, and it's very important that things are secure. So this is just an example to show that it's not just about credit card numbers which have to be transmitted securely, because there you could say, okay, if my number gets lost, then someone could buy something for a couple of $100 and the bank pays for it anyway. And anyway, it's not much money, or I get an insurance which keeps track of that. So there you would say, oh, it doesn't matter so much, but with these kind of examples where human life is really concerned, there you see that there are applications where it's very important to be very secure. And yeah, the problem now is related as again to this view looking at the whole picture of computer security. One of the sources for possible attacks is that you're using new architectures. So on the one hand, so on the one hand you have the internal users maybe in your company intranet, and on the other hand you have external users, which may also be company employees or just general people who want to access the web pages of the company. And all of this is connected via the internet and via web browsers and servers. And then you also have on the right hand side the databases, which may be connected to the web servers in order to display company related information. So if you call the web page, then maybe the web server gets queries the database to find out the news information about the company, like the stock rates or whatever. And yeah, everything of that is connected both by the internet and the internet. And another source of vulnerabilities is that you have a lot of different software products around that have to work together in a secure way. And yeah, here's just some examples given. And the problem is how to fit them together. So each one of them may be secure in itself, but if you put them together, then there may be some kind of problem in translating the data. And this is another source of vulnerabilities. So just very short recapitulation of what is security in general terms. So security means you want to, so different things. One main thing you want to achieve in terms of security is that the sensitive data is not given to anyone who should not read it. So you want confidentiality. Then secondly, the data should not be possible to modify by someone who is not authorized. So in this sense you want integrity. Then also you don't want anyone to destroy your data, or you don't want people to attack availability. So your system should be always up, especially in the example of telemedicine. That is actually the most important problem there, because if you're remotely controlled operation computer or operation robot suddenly breaks down, then that's very bad for the patient. So there you can see that it's not always just confidentiality. I mean, that's the main classic security requirement from the military sector, but in the economical, commercial situation, it's also a lot of things related to integrity. So you don't want employees to change their own payroll data to get more money. And also, denial of service. There are also many situations where this is important. Now if you take this this holistic view, this means you want to consider how the different parts of the system fit together, and the different software products, which I mentioned a couple of slides earlier. And this picture, this is being sketched in a way. So at this point, I will not really go into much detail, but just for as a general view for you to see how such a view on the system could look like in a specific example. So you may have C++ programs running on your computer, which communicate via the object request broker, which is the vertical arrow, with other parts of the system, which may also be Java classes in the left bottom part, and well, different things. And these things may all be attacked using various means, which may also work together. For example, hostile applets or people trying to get illegal access in some way, yeah, and other things. So the and the point is that you really have to look at the whole picture, because yeah, as I mentioned already, often the system is attacked at the boundary between two parts of the system, which may be quite different. Yeah, the parts may be quite different, and so it may there may be a problem with the translation of the data between the different parts. This may not be done in a secure way, and that's often where the problem is in practice. So that's why you need this overall view on the system. And similarly, it's not just important to look at the whole the system as a complete thing, but you also have to look completely in a vertical way, in a sense. So your system consists of several levels, for example, the cryptographic level or the transmission level, and so on. And yeah, all of these have to be secure, because if the attacker is able to attack just one of them, then that's bad. And this is another way in which you have to, in which you need a holistic view on the system, not just the horizontal way, which I presented on the previous slide, but also the vertical way. So an example would be if you have a virtual private network where you use an internet communication to transmit data between different parts of a company by encrypting the data, and therefore it should look like it's a really a private network, a dedicated line. That's the idea, but there you have, then you may have problems on two different levels. Maybe firstly the simple physical transmission could be attacked by whatever, simply cutting wires or whatever. And secondly, you could have the cryptographic level, which could be attacked by breaking the code or something. And you have to make sure that both levels are made secure, because, of course, the attacker will choose the weakest link in the system. And if one of the levels is insecure, then the attacker will attack that level.
If you broke the line, you will find everything encrypted, so you'll get nothing.
Yes, in that sense, you could, in this example, only attack availability. Yes, so, but I mean, this availability may be an important goal also, like in the telemedicine application. But it's true that, that then you cannot read the data. That's true, yeah. Yeah, and so this is the example picture relating to this vertical view. Yeah, as I mentioned already, there may be, yeah, there are a distributed system. For example, you have the distribution layer where your messages, well, you have your transmission protocols, for example. But below that, something I just now didn't mention, of course, you also have the hardware level. So people could try to attack the hardware even. Well, in the case of smart cards, we saw in the previous tutorial several examples where this could succeed, but of course you could also attack other kinds of hardware like operating systems. Yeah, and that may also be a good way for an adversary to go ahead. So yeah, there was a lot of attention some years ago about this Clipper chip, which was which the US government tried to get through in public, which was a chip which included a cryptographic operation, and there was a lot of discussion about whether this chip is really as secure as it was claimed, or whether the American Secret Service has actually some backdoor in there. And so in the end it was not used, but this is just an example for the fact that you also have to worry about hardware, not just the software level. Well, other examples are, for example, like the thing about tempest, which is the name for the phenomenon that you can actually read information which is displayed on a computer monitor from well, several hundred meters ago using the electronic radiation. So if you have this monitor here and it would display this slide, then people like a few floors down could read what I'm displaying here simply because of the electronic radiation. Yeah, that's also something happening on the hardware level. And yeah, so then if you go up, of course, the solution layer I already mentioned, then the system layer, for example, the operating system, this may also be possible to attack this. And even higher, of course, the application layer, where the application programs are, for example, I mentioned already Word, which may enable attackers to launch attacks. And then, well, the meta layer, that's really a more conceptual layer where you think about the system structure. So this doesn't really exist in this physical way, but it's more a conceptual layer. But it's also useful to consider this layer when thinking about the security of the system.
Nowadays, hack yourself service has been written by experienced hackers, mm-hmm. and it's available all around the internet. Mm-hmm. It's mostly used by people who are unexperienced. It's very user friendly. Mm-hmm. I think they're called SwiftKitty.
Yes. Yeah.
These kind of attacks, do they form a substantial damage, or are they just?
Yes, I would say in some cases they do. So, for example, this attack on the Yahoo site was also performed using these scripts that you said. So there is a potential for very high damage to, in this case, I think it was like a couple of million dollars damage from the fact, firstly, that the website was down for a couple of days and they could not do any business in these days, so they lost money because of that. And secondly, because the reputation of the company was damaged. I think, or it was eBay, maybe one of these famous e-commerce sites who actually do e-commerce. I mean, then I think it was eBay, but I don't remember. It was like 1.5 years ago. I only remember they lost a couple of million dollars because of lost business and lost reputation. Because if customers get worried about the fact that the company could be hacked, then they may not buy things with them anymore, and so a lot of money is lost. So this is really an economic problem, yeah.
So the availability of such user-friendly hardware constitutes a real danger.
The user-friendly software, you mean?
User-friendly hacking software.
Yeah. Yes.
A real threat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would say so, yeah. Okay, so some words about network attacks. So the network is the main access point to launch attacks against operating systems from the outside. And what you can do is, while the messages are in transit, you're often able to intercept them and to read the messages. And also to insert messages into the network which appear to come from somewhere else. And then, of course, you can also replay older messages if you can insert them. And you just replay them, the ones that were read earlier, or you may modify them and insert them in the modified way. And you may also repudiate messages, and I mentioned already distributed denial of service. So, on an untrusted network like the internet, you can do pretty much everything at the moment, provided that you don't use specific protocols like SSH or SSL, and provided that you do this in a secure way. So if you just use the internet like this, then it's very insecure. Yeah, the reasons for the fact that it is so insecure is that yes, well, your site may not be very secure, and because there may be flaws from the first from the first instance, and often systems are shipped with an insecure pre-configuration of the system, and people don't always fix that. So they simply they get the system, they set it up, and they run it, and they don't worry about the fact that the configuration of the system may be insecure. For example, if you have a firewall, then sometimes it's the case that it's predefined to be very liberal, which is not good, maybe, but you just use it that way because it's the easiest thing to do, and your administrator may not know much about what is going on. And there are some technical features which may enable attacks, for example, in the TCP/IP protocol and also in the UDP protocol.
Is someone this three-way handshake?
Yeah. So yeah, this is a specific feature of the TCP protocol where you have this three-way handshake, and the problem there is that you can launch. I mean, there are different attacks. Some of them, one of them is called the ping of death. Well, this is not really related to this protocol, but I mean there are different attacks relating to different protocols. And one main idea is that the attacker does as if he wants to set up a connection, and then the attack side returns another message, although the attacker didn't really want to set up a connection, and also the attacker may have a forged sender address. So this message which is being sent back to some other, it's actually being sent back to some other place. And this way, if you then set up a lot of, or if you initiate a lot of sessions, then this other place may be swarmed with messages coming from somewhere, this way you would get a distributed a denial of service attack, which you may make distributed also. And the problem there is that you don't know who the attacker is, because the system who sends all these messages is really an innocent victim, not the attacker in the first place. So this is the problem there. Some examples for operating system vulnerabilities. So it may be the case that the administrator is not so trustworthy than you should hope. And the problem there is, of course, the administrator can do everything in many systems, like in Unix, for example. And that may be a problem. And there are other technical problems, such as rights, maybe. Yeah.
How does this super user get the problem?
Well, the problem is if the administrator is not the bad guy in a way, then of course you can do everything to the system, and that's a very straightforward way.
Yes, but such a thing is unavoidable. I mean, you have to have experts, and you have to trust these experts.
Yeah, but you could think about somehow splitting up the system that
the
power of the super users. You could have different people being in charge of different parts of the system, the way this is being done in the banking sector, which is not like the operating system level, but just to give an example, is that there you have the so-called four eyes principle. So there you have the obvious problem that employees of banks may be tempted to, attack the bank to get money from the bank, and this is actually a big problem. So I forget the exact numbers, but there's a high percentage of people who are being fired, of bank employees who are being fired because they try to betray the bank. So this is a real problem, and the way this is in the banking sector being done is that with important transactions, we have the 4I principle, meaning that there are two people who can only perform the transaction. And so, for example, you may have a cryptographic key which is split up into two parts, and you can only sign something with a key if both people who have the two parts work together and sit down together and sign the whatever the electronic document. And then you make sure that at least it's not enough that one of the two is corrupt, but both have to be corrupt. And this is a bit safer, just for organizational reasons. And this could also, you could try to do the same principle on the operating system level. Okay. And another problem related to that, it may not just be the fact that the administrator is a bad guy, but also there are technical problems related to the fact that this user has a lot of power, because it's often the case that programs are being run under the control of the super user, like the mail program, send mail, is being run as a super user program. And if there's a problem with this program, then if you can somehow get a Trojan horse in there or whatever, then this program can do a lot of damage. So it's not just a problem related to the person, the human who is the administrator, but also the programs which are run as in the administrator mode. So even if the administrator is trustworthy, then there may be problems related to that. So, yeah. Okay, yeah, I will not expand all these points in detail, because I wanted to keep this section really rather as a background section. But yeah, there are quite a couple of problems related to operating systems. And yeah, relating to these vulnerabilities, of course, then you have different kinds of attacks which exploit these weaknesses. And yeah, some of them, I already mentioned denial of service. Another one, the buffer overflow attack, is actually, I think, one of the most commonly exploited attack. So the way this works is that you have a buffer in your system which takes data coming from somewhere, and sometimes the length of this data is not being checked. So if you have if the data is supposed to be of length 10 bytes or something, then there, after these 10 bytes in the system, there may be some critical information, like the address where the program is going to jump to after the current command is executed. And if somehow you manage to send data to the program which is more than 10 bytes long, then if the program doesn't check this, then the address which comes in the memory after these 10 bytes is going to be overwritten by the new data, namely by the end of the new data. And of course, if you are really smart, then you write another address in there which may cause your computer to jump to somewhere else, where maybe your Trojan horse sits or whatever. So this is a very famous kind of attack. Sometimes it's enough to have a very long internet address on your to load this into your web browser, to then execute the maybe the part which is after the first 255 characters or something. So this, there used to be an attack like that. Yeah, so this is a very common source of problems. Yeah, another thing which is now often being used on the internet are these dynamic pages, where the internet page is created while you look at the page. And this means that you have to, well, you may have queries to a database, as I mentioned already, and yeah, this may be a cause of vulnerability. For example, if CGI scripts are used to do this, CGI scripts are little programs which, for example, process the data from a database. And yeah, this is also one example related to the earlier question, that often these programs are executed with administrator rights because it may simplify setting up the system. And if this program somehow gets corrupted, then yeah, bad things can happen. Yeah, and especially then, yeah, the way this could work is these attacks is that, well, you, for example, the database may require some authorization, which could be bypassed by going through the lower levels of the system. So this relates to the earlier slide about the different system levels. And yeah, one lower level would be the operating system device driver, where you could get access. Or maybe you may not even have an authorization system, or it may be fully configured. So this is also another possible source of vulnerability. So yeah, to sum up there, you could have the situation is that you may have new routes for attacks. So as I mentioned in the background on the previous slide. And yeah, one of these layers that I mentioned earlier is the application level. So there you may also have different programs, such as the buffer overflow, again here on this application level, not just on the operating system level. And similar to that, exceeding array bounds, so there the strategy is really similar, or also to misuse pointers. And if you have the possibility to download active content, then this may also give rise for problems. But I mean, this is, I assume that this is also you've heard of this, so this is just background. Yeah, okay, this I already explained earlier. And yeah, I think I want to come to the end of this section on the background. So yeah, I think I will skip this point. Okay, it's not only the current trends where new vulnerabilities may arise. It's one thing is that of the mobile agent. So this is a thing that has been around for some time now, although it's so far not really being used so much. So there are the idea is you do not have just an applet which you download from some site in order to execute it on your computer, but you may have programs which themselves travel over the internet. And the standard example is that of an agent which goes over the internet in order to find cheap plane tickets, for example. Of course, this has to assumes that the sites where the agent tries to travel to is actually ready to receive the site, the agent. And at this point, I think there are not so many things being done along these lines, but this may change. And this raises also new security problems, both related to the security of the host and the security of the agent itself. Because while the agent travels, of course, firstly the agent goes to the flight carrier A and gets the price information, and then goes on to flight carrier B, then of course flight carrier B should not be able to change the price information of flight carrier A in order to, you know, fool the user into believing that B is cheaper than A. So that's in a way a new situation where you look at the security of the agent rather than the host system, which is really new if you compare it to applets, because if you download applets, you don't care whether the applet may be attacked, but you only care about your own system. And yeah, there are different other examples. I cannot really explain them in detail, but the point is just there are always new trends and they may have new security problems. Oh yeah, I already explained this. Okay, and I think I will skip to the detailed explanation. these. Okay, so this is the background as part of the first part of the background, part of this tutorial. As I said, there are, as you probably already have heard, there are different kinds of threats, and the point is that you really have to look at the system as a whole, because many attacks are possible because the things connecting the different system parts and the different components or the different kinds of applications, they are often, there are vulnerabilities across these division lines, and that's really the most important part about this. So it's not enough to have your components be secure themselves, but the problem is all the different kinds of components fit together. And so then I am going to proceed with this part on secure development of systems. I think we should probably still do it before the break, or what's the plan?
With part of the how long would it take the second part? Do you need 2 hours or more or less?
Okay, so the general structure is there are two main parts, and this was like the first half of the first main part, so the second half will not be done.
I think we need to distribute the
Allow
for that. Mm-hmm.
RBAC.
Role-based access control.
Role-based access control. Role means.
Role means you don't assign rights to new people as individuals, but you say someone
role
is an administrator, and administrators have rights. So it's just one level between the user and the rights. You have the roles, which are basically sets of users or collections of users where you can define rights.
You have a point. So what's the problem then? So having a role, that's the way everything is.
Yeah, it's a very common way of dealing with access control. Very
role based.
So you were able to transfer it in the control.
Okay. I'll put this now.
So remove some.
This is yours.
Okay. Yours. And I use some drawing because it has to be accessible.
Okay. So perhaps we just want to minimize. Okay, I am sure. I don't know, but I will.
You go to file and you open the display.
Okay. No, it's good.
Open the display. Yours? You don't know it.
Okay, I open.
It's mixed. No, it's maybe not.
Or perhaps it's broken.
No, come on.